Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water, filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended this unique 3-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze. We put it in, it took like 30 seconds, guys. And its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
So that I do not like to spend my time or money in salons when I can help it, but I do enjoy a good manicure, and I especially enjoy spending time with my daughters doing the Olive and June Mani system at home, because we can all get a good looking manicure for around $2. We know that the polish won't chip and will last at least a full week. We get to await with anticipation the new colors that come out each season. The girls love being able to add some sparkles or choose whether they want their top coat to be matte or shiny. We just have a really good time together with salon grade tools that are so easily explained so that we can do a really good job taking care of our nails, but do it all from the comfort at home. All the choices of a big salon stored in a basket in my closet for when we're ready to hang out together. The Olive and June Mani system is a real game changer. So visit oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first Mani system.
I don't know what the point is of attacking individual witnesses when all those witnesses corroborate the same story.
Yes. Like, what are you even doing? Well, because they're running out of things to say about the process. And now they have other people who corroborate the whistleblower, so they can't attack the whistleblower. They're running out of things to bitch about is the long and short of it.
This is Sarah.
This is Beth.
You're listening to Pantsuit Politics,
the home of grace-filled political conversations. Hello, everyone. It is Friday, and we are excited to be here with you to talk about elections coming up this Tuesday, to talk about the impeachment resolution that has passed in the House of Representatives, and to celebrate the beginning of Pantsuit Politics. This episode is so nostalgic, Sarah, because we are just a few days out from Kentucky's gubernatorial race, and our very first episode of Pantsuit Politics 4 years ago was about the Kentucky gubernatorial race. Here we are again.
Yes. And just before we start talking about Matt Bevin again, who is not my favorite topic of conversation, we will be celebrating those 4 years with our final stop on the Nuance Nation tour in Dallas on Friday, November 8th. We want to see all y'all there. It's going to be awesome. Also, new data point. If you haven't bought your tickets yet, we're going to have Nuance Nation t-shirts for sale. I'm so excited.
And MJ Hegger will be with us. It's going to be a lot of fun all around. So hope to see you there. Okay. This coming Tuesday, elections happening across the United States. We have three governor's races, ours, the Louisiana governor's race, in which the incumbent Democrat John Bel Edwards will face off against Eddie Rispone, the Republican. The Mississippi governor's race, the current Attorney General Jim Hood is the Democrat in that race. The current Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves is the Republican. And then there are important legislative races in Louisiana, Mississippi, Virginia, and New Jersey. Plus tons of local races that have really significant consequences for everyone's lives, as we talk about here all the time. I was fascinated to learn this morning that Texas has 10 constitutional amendments on its ballot on Tuesday.
Why, Texas? That's a lot.
It's a lot. I'm going to put a link in the show notes so that you can read them. Some of them are pretty technical. Not something that everyone's going to get real fired up about, but still, a constitutional amendment is a constitutional amendment. You should pay attention.
So in Kentucky, everybody's watching our race. We've had a couple New York Times, Washington Post articles because our current incumbent governor, Republican Matt Bevin, has really styled himself as like a baby Trump. Like he's Trump. In fact, he was spending so much time with the Trump administration in Washington, D.C., that there was speculation he was looking for an administrative position. That did not happen. There was an anonymous quote in an article I read that somebody from the Trump administration was like, we like him where he's at. He is historically unpopular in our state because he's mean, like about a lot of things. And he has really tried to hitch his wagon to Trump. There's lots of commercials with him and Trump. There's lots of commercials with his opponent, Andy Beshear, our current attorney general, and Hillary Clinton and AOC and Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. There's one that really upsets me where it's like Andy Beshear, son of former Kentucky governor, lifelong Kentuckian. He's with them, not with us. That kind of language really angers me. But the polling shows that they're pretty close. It's going to be a tight election and hopefully we'll have higher turnout since turnout in these off-year elections are usually pretty low. The Kentucky Secretary of State predicts 31% of registered Kentucky voters will show up. But I really hope we exceed those expectations this year.
31% of a state should not select the state's governor. You know, these are big deal elections. I love that we have our constitutional officers elected off of presidential cycles because in theory, it should be about our state, not about what's going on across the country. I really hate that Matt Bevin has made this a nationalized election when there is plenty to talk about in Kentucky. We have major issues within our state that are deserving of good conversation in this race. And instead, because he's in trouble, I think Bevin's only strategy is just fire up that Trump base.
So a big, big issue in Kentucky is the pension system. And Matt Bevin has decided that his best strategy is to attack public school teachers, which are kind of a historically popular crowd, and didn't get the pension reform he wanted through anyway. So he's sort of trying, I think, to deflect from that, both the fact that he didn't get done what he swore up and down he was going to get done, and from the unpopularity of his sort of approach when dealing with this problem.
I have felt pretty consistent about Matt Bevin for the last couple of years. I respect that we have problems that are going to have unpopular solutions, no matter who brings those solutions to the table, right? When you don't have enough money for things, everybody's going to walk away unhappy. And I appreciate that he's trying to tackle it instead of pass it on to the next governor. However, he, as someone I love very much says, brings a chainsaw when a scalpel would do it. He just cannot work with other people at all. He takes every problem we have and makes it infinitely worse by the way he tackles it. And it has landed him in front of Kentucky's Supreme Court numerous times. It has resulted in it being very difficult to hire and retain good public employees in Kentucky, which we need desperately. It's prompted a lot of people to retire from that system before we had a plan to deal with that. And for me, even though I probably agree more with Bevin on some of the relevant Kentucky policy issues more than I agree with Andy Beshear, Bevan's values, as they have been demonstrated in the way he interacts with literally everyone in our state, are just so contrary to the way that I teach my children to operate in the world that I cannot vote for him.
He has other capacities. Like, I have seen him in situations where he is really focused on economic development and he's talking about changes he'd like to make in Kentucky. And it's sort of like his vision, like a vision talk. And he is convincing and he is authentic. And even as a person who has never liked him or his approach, I will sit in an audience. I sat in a lot of these when I was an elected official and thought, man, if you could just stick to this, it would be a lot better. But he can't. He has to make everybody that disagrees with him the enemy. Whereas Andy Beshear and Jacqueline Coleman, his running mate, who is a friend of mine and who I just adore, have a really different, more traditionally political approach. Okay. Like, we have solutions. We can talk about it. We don't have to paint everybody as that disagrees with us as an enemy of Kentucky. I will be anxious to see if Kentucky is ready for a return to like the more traditional politics that's not so personal and nasty.
And Bevan has been very successful on economic development. He has. He is good at that. I hear Beshear's idea for new revenue in our state. He talks a lot about growing agribusiness, agritech, about casinos and sports betting and medical marijuana. And I don't think the numbers back up a lot of what he's saying. I'm very skeptical about many of his policy proposals, but I am also more than I am skeptical of those proposals, tired of the climate that Bevan has fostered in our state. I think that ultimately that kind of climate undermines all of the good he's done with economic development. Why would you want to come into a state that has this crippling partisanship as a business owner? So I hope that Kentuckians will get there with me. Matt Bevan has done his very best to make this race about abortion. There is a sign hanging on my door every single day right now about Beshear being in favor of abortion, which he doesn't talk about a lot because it's not that relevant to a gubernatorial race. I also just pragmatically think, if you are voting for a governor based on abortion, what you're really saying is, I do or do not support my tax dollars going to funding court battles about this. And I don't want my tax dollars going to fund court battles about this. So I don't know. When we talked about this 4 years ago, I was certain that Matt Bevan was going to lose to Jack Conway, who I thought was a worse candidate than Andy Beshear. And he pulled through. And I think that it will be really interesting to see not only whether Kentuckians are ready for that more traditional style in Frankfort, but whether they are willing to kind of cast off that hardened Republican label, which I am certain everybody in Senator McConnell's office is going to be watching with bated breath as well.
My favorite part about this focus on the abortion aspect is that Jacqueline Coleman, the lieutenant governor candidate with Andy Beshear, is currently pregnant. So that's a really nice sort of mental gymnastics to paint a pregnant woman as wanting to kill babies. I swear if we could just move past this, it would make me so happy.
The advertising sucks so much, too. I got this mailer about Greg Stembo, who's running for attorney general, and it put his face on a chicken suit to talk about how he is self-dealing and I don't know. It's just ridiculous. It doesn't even say who's running against him for attorney general, which is a guy that was handpicked by McConnell's team. But it's just the whole thing is so silly. And I'll tell you what, I think that's why we see around 30% turnout in these elections, because you just get all of that crap in the mail and think, what is the point of any of this? But it is too important to think that. So please go vote.
Well, and let me just tell you, I don't watch TV. Like, I don't watch broadcast television ever. And I don't know how people who do watch broadcast television regularly do it with these commercials. I've just caught a couple of them in my doctor's office and I almost had to get up and leave. They are so frustrating. And so I'm ready for broadcast let's do this streaming wars thing in a big way. Because I'm ready for all those commercials to die a slow death. But yes, optimistic. Let's everybody get out and vote. Let's show that we do care and that we're empowered and that all this money spent on advertising doesn't work, and that we do get out there and we vote our values and we want to participate in our democracy, even if we are frustrated by the campaign season, even if we're frustrated by some of the candidates and the choices we have, that we still see it as important to participate.
Next up, we are going to talk about impeachment and the resolution and all the testimony. There have been a lot of developments. We're going to catch up.
Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting.
We're finally at my favorite time of year. Spring is here. Summer is just around the corner. We're getting our summer essentials ready, our sunscreen, our emotional support water bottles, our steamy beach reads. But maybe you would prefer your steamy earbuds. This year, there is a new kind of essential right at your fingertips. Enemies to love, chance encounters, a slow burn, friends that become more. Whatever your favorite romantic trope, Dipsy has a spicy audio story just for you. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short and spicy audio stories that bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You can discover stories about second chance romances and adventurous vacation flings. That's my favorite. Hot and heavy hookups. It can be as heavy or as light as you want it to be. This is what I love about Dipsy. It is a modern approach to romance through high quality, captivating audio fiction that you can listen to in the privacy of your own headphones. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipseastories.com/pantsuit. That's dipsystories.com/pantsuit.
I recently reorganized my closet and realized that I never need to buy a white blouse or a blue dress again as long as I live. Guys, I have plenty. I did want to add some much neglected color, like pink and yellow, to my closet, and I knew just where to go. Quince always has timeless pieces and a true rainbow of options that can help you build a classic wardrobe no matter the season. It's getting warmer, so I got a soft pink chiffon pleated miniskirt that is so cute, and a really beautiful yellow cashmere tee. It's short-sleeved. It's perfect for the sort of bridge weather we're experiencing right now. And the best part is all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I absolutely love it. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/pantsuit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/pantsuit to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/pantsuit.
Well, with impeachment season upon us, not only do we have an impeachment resolution we're going to talk about in a minute, but we have testimonies every stinking day. And I feel like they're all so impactful, but because they're all so impactful and they're coming so quick, they don't have a lot of impact. I think that's why the resolution is coming, because they want to get some of this stuff out in the public so that we can really see the impact of somebody like Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vidman, a decorated Army officer and national security expert on Ukraine, who testified this week.
I'm sorry, my brain is stuck a little bit in you saying impeachment season. Like, I was thinking what flavor of coffee and what shoes go with impeachment season. It's just so wild to hear it put that way. Okay, so Lieutenant Colonel Venman's testimony was very significant because he was actually on the call between Trump and Zelensky from July 25th that kicked off this entire inquiry. And that's important for a bunch of reasons. But the main one is, at this point, we don't really need the whistleblower anymore. And that's a point that Republicans continue to push. And part of the reason that these resolutions passed by the House today are so significant in getting rules out there for a public process, because you have the president and some of his defenders constantly saying, well, where's the whistleblower? Where'd this person go? When are we going to hear from the whistleblower? Well, as they pointed out early on, the whistleblower didn't actually hear this call. He heard about the call from other people. Now we have someone on the record, name and face there together, who was on the call. And he made sure to say in his statement, I am not the whistleblower. I will not tell you who the whistleblower is. I think he said he didn't know who the whistleblower is, but he did hear the call and he was concerned about it. And he reported through the chain of command about his concerns on that call.
That was the second time that he'd raised concerns, right?
Mm-hmm.
This man and this man's story is so powerful, which is, of course, why they attacked him. I'm going to get to that in a second because I have some very strong feelings about that. But he immigrated from Ukraine with his twin brother and his father and his grandmother after the death of his mother when he was three. Then he talks about in his opening statement how his father really impressed upon them the importance of really adopting their new country and adapting to their customs and their language. Both him and his brother served in the military. He received a Purple Heart for an injury when he was in Iraq. They both now work for the National Security Council. Their offices are across the hallway from each other, which is amazing. And, you know, he came in his dress blues. Apparently, the testimony was incredibly detailed and convincing. And not surprisingly, the second I heard that he was on the call, I'm like, oh, they're going to have questions about whether stuff got left out. And they did. And the answer was yes. Some stuff was left out, including a specific mention of Joe Biden. And I just think this particular firsthand account from someone who is so dedicated to this country is incredibly damaging, incredibly damaging. And they know it. And that's why, in the infamous words of Nicole Wallace on MSNBC, who called them chicken shits, Laura Ingraham and John Woo, which go home. Why is he a commentator? Questioning his allegiance to America and his patriotism. I found that so hypocritical and so disgusting. I have trouble even talking about it.
I don't know what the point is of attacking individual witnesses when all those witnesses corroborate the same story.
Yes. Like, what are you even doing? Well, because they're running out of things to say about the process. And now they have other people who corroborate the whistleblower, so they can't attack the whistleblower. They're running out of things to bitch about is the long and short of it.
While we are recording, the House is spending hours with Timothy Morrison, who was the senior director for Russian affairs at the National Security Council. He resigned on Thursday. People close to him say that he's been thinking about resigning and returning to the private sector for a while, although it is a little bit weird that he resigned so suddenly before his testimony. He is reportedly just a real straight arrow, too. Like, very, very conservative. Kind of a Bolton acolyte, is how I've seen him described, and someone who is going to corroborate all the details that have been heard so far, who said he felt sick when he heard that call, and also someone who is not going to go in there and attack the president. I just feel like if you're Laura Ingraham, et cetera, and you have this parade of witnesses coming through who, until this very moment, have been your people. You know, they're super conservative. They're hawkish on foreign affairs. They served previous Republican administrations. They are only showing up once they've gotten subpoenas to do so because they don't want to go personally bankrupt in court fighting about whether they listen to the executive or the legislative branch of our government. Why are you attacking these people? If you're going to make the case on behalf of the president, make the case on behalf of the president. But these folks who are just career national security officials doing their best to tell a very accurate, detailed story, only once they've been subpoenaed to do that, what is the point of dragging these folks through the mud?
I mean, if you're Laura Ingraham, ratings, right? I think that's part of it, is you want to defend the president. That's your base of viewers. But the congressional Republicans, and I don't want to talk about them as a monolith. You know, even Liz Cheney was like, we are not going to attack this man's patriotism. But she was, you know, she was having to say that because other people were implying the same. And again, I just think they're desperate. I think that they are desperate. They are running out of things to say. Besides, you know, cherry picking polls that say, oh, people in swing states don't support the impeachment. But that, again, doesn't address the fundamental concern and the fundamental issue, which is, was the president withholding military aid to a country essential to the national security of the United States for his personal political gain? And they don't really have a talking point for that.
We've gotten through email some questions about this, so I think it's worth zooming way out for a second. We've talked about this in little pieces, but as things distill, I think the question here is not, was it quid pro quo? It is more, was it corrupt? Because rightly, many people point out that all of foreign policy is, in a sense, quid pro quo. It's transactional. You do this for us, we'll do this for you. That is not unusual or surprising. Also, yes, sometimes we ask other countries to help us with ongoing investigations. We ask other countries to help us with all sorts of things. The question is, was this corrupt? And the answer to that, I think, is found in the fact that the president named Joe Biden, harped on wanting Zelensky himself to talk to CNN about opening these investigations. Clearly used, he bought on to Giuliani's version of the way Ukrainian politics work and the Ukrainian theory of the 2016 election, and used that and tied it to national security issues. And that to me is where the corruption lives. And I think everything else is kind of a distraction. And that is the central point that nobody wants to talk about. But it's why a whole parade of people whose names we didn't know before this are coming through, and all of them are consistently saying, hey, Ukrainian resistance to Russian aggression is important to world peace. And messing with that fragile state because Trump's feelings are hurt about 2016 and he doesn't want to run against Joe Biden in 2020 is wrong. And that's the story. That is the clear, consistent story that plays out just reading the opening statements from all of the people who've been in front of the committees.
I think what's really important and what is hard to understand for the majority of Americans is we live in a world where everything is partisan and everything is political. But inside the national security structure, that is not the case. Like, it's not that there aren't competing worldviews or approaches. There absolutely are. But inside the National Security Council, inside the highest ranks of the United States military, they have their eye on a different ball. They're not obsessed with every election cycle in the same way a member of Congress would be, right? Like, it's a different perspective, and it's hard to remember people like that still exist in 2019, where politics is a part of every tiny little piece of pop culture or consumerism or whatever, that there are realms, particularly inside our government, where the perspective is not just soaked through with hyperpartisanship.
Yeah, I think it is encouraging to read about these folks coming out of the NSC and the State Department and the work they do and the backgrounds they bring to it, the extraordinary qualifications and service of these people. You know, when you use a phrase, as the White House has, like unelected bureaucrat, you are really trashing the people who make our government go every single day through multiple administrations with totally different philosophies. You know, if you want to feel good about the federal government, and I say this as a person who is always for limiting the power of the federal government, if you want to feel really good and impressed about the federal government, read about some of these people who are testifying.
Well, and I think impeachment, because it is a political process, historically has seen a flow of political witnesses to a certain extent, especially with Clinton. To a certain extent, even with Nixon, and I think what sets this impeachment apart is that you are seeing this flow of people, even inside a political process, that are not political. To me, it feels different. It feels like, oh, it's not just that we think this particular president, because of our partisan outlook, is terrible at the job and has violated certain rules and regulations. It's that we think this president, separate from politics or his partisan policy positions, is a danger to national security. That feels really different to me.
And it's also about what future presidents can do. I think Nancy Pelosi, in her perfect world, would not be going through this process. Would just be going into another election and working really hard to defeat this president at the ballot box. And I think my distant, not a lifelong Democrat perspective here is that when you consider what it would mean to future presidencies for a president to be able to say, I don't care what Congress has set as our policy toward Ukraine, and I don't care what funds Congress has appropriated to assist Ukraine, I want to get for myself everything I can out of this deal. So I'm going to put that funding on hold until I have a promise to get dirt on my political opponents. If you say that that's okay as a Congress, if you do nothing about that, what is a future president going to do that even ratchets up the corruption around that? And you heard a lot of Democrats using that language as they considered the resolution that the House passed on Thursday morning. We didn't want to do this. We are forced here by the facts. And I think they're right.
So we have an impeachment resolution that passed yesterday. The resolution is to continue the ongoing impeachment investigation. So this is not the articles of impeachment they're voting on. This is just a resolution to formalize the rules for the public phase of the impeachment process.
I don't know how to talk about this without saying really bluntly that I think all of these process arguments are so without basis that I don't even know where to begin. And I understand why passing this resolution probably is the political move that needs to happen and probably does need to set up the next phase. But I do not like the narrative that Republicans have rightly pointed out that the process so far has been secret, because it hasn't been. Everyone's aware of it. I've read opening statements from all kinds of people. I've been following it like it's happening in my basement. You know, it is a public process insofar as we know it's occurring and who's coming in and out of it. And it is a
private process. It's not televised.
Yeah. Insofar as people are talking about really sensitive information that requires a lot of consideration about what gets presented to the general public. And also, do we all have the attention span for 10 hours of testimony from someone in the State Department we've never heard of? No. I mean, this is the way they're supposed to be doing it. Anyway, the resolution has passed. It sets the rules for the continuation of an ongoing impeachment investigation.
These are the rules in the committees that kind of exist anyway. that set up the sort of due process rights of the minority party. It authorizes the Intel Committee to convene public hearings and produce a report that will go to the Judiciary Committee. But they're not rewriting anything major, I think, in this resolution.
One of my favorite parts of this resolution is that, so the Intel Committee convenes these public hearings, produces that report, sends it to Judiciary. That's where the president's lawyers can get involved and cross-examine witnesses and things. But they could lose that right if the White House keeps stonewalling the investigation. There is a line in it that says, should the president unlawfully refuse to make witnesses available, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee could impose appropriate remedies, including by denying specific requests by the president or his counsel under these procedures to call or question witnesses. So they're saying you can be a part of this process only if you cooperate with this process.
Yeah, I like that. I feel like it's a little bit of a holding their feet to the fire in a good way.
It's fair. It's absolutely fair.
So we had the vote when we're recording this morning on Halloween. We got you this time because usually y'all schedule these news-making things to happen the second we're done recording. But we smartened up and we delayed until this vote happened. Ha! So we have 232 House Democrats, one independent. We see you, Justin Amash, voting yes in support of opening an impeachment inquiry. We have a hot mess of zero Republicans voting no, four not voting, including two Democrats, Colin Peterson from Minnesota and Jeff Van Drew from New Jersey, who said they just want to continue the existing investigation, which we don't really understand this stance.
Spring is so tricky because I feel the sun shining, the earth is waking up, and I want fresh, vegetable-forward meals. And I'm running in 75 directions and don't have a lot of kitchen and prep time. Fortunately, Factor is here for me and for you with fresh, never frozen meals that are chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in 2 minutes. They have a ton of options for us, including keto, protein plus, vegan, veggie, calorie smart, and so many add-ons. If you need help with breakfast or snacks or on-the-go lunches or beverages, Factor is here for you. Every meal I've had from Factor is so well composed, it's so flavorful, the sauces are delicious. And Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look for Earth Month Eats badges on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/pantsuit50 and use code pantsuit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code pantsuit50 at factormeals.com/pantsuit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
No, because this vote is just setting up the rules. The Judiciary Committee could get this report from the Intel Committee and say, I don't think we're going to write articles of impeachment. Now, that is very improbable, right? But they could do it. And so if you are in favor of continuing the existing investigation, which, by the way, some Republicans have said they are, Will Hurd, Adam Kinzinger, and others have said, yeah, let's see where the facts lead us. I don't understand why you would be against this process to get those facts out into the public in the form of a report to the Judiciary Committee. Seems inconsistent to me.
Agreed. But whatever, it's they're trying to carve out a little political space for themselves, which it's like they think that the Republicans running against them next year are going to cut commercials that are going to say, oh, but listen, they didn't support the initial impeachment resolution. I mean, no, they're still going to paint you as favoring impeachment, friends. So it's not like you're going to get a pass or anything.
And that's the point, I think, about all these process discussions. Whatever the process is, there will be an argument that the process is wrong. If this were all happening in public right now, it would be a circus. It would be grandstanding. It would be performative for the cameras. Since it's not happening in public, it's secret and Soviet style. Whatever it is going to be attacked because there is no good way to impeach a sitting president. It's a terrible thing to have to do. That's why we haven't done it very often in our nation's history, you know? But I think the question is this going forth in a way where we have confidence in the facts as they are being developed? And to me, the answer is clearly yes.
Yeah. I think that all the polling around impeachment just reflects America's fundamental discomfort with the process and, you know, the idea that we would be removing somebody from office. I don't think that means that they think it's never appropriate or that they think that everything Trump has done is okay. So, I mean, just the way we phrase any talk about impeachment, particularly in polling, bothers me.
Well, all the phrasing about how these witnesses are showing up is hard, too, because you'll see, like, Timothy Morrison appeared voluntarily after receiving a subpoena. Okay, well, if you got a subpoena, it's not voluntary. But we're acting like it's voluntary because other people have received subpoenas and not gone. There's no good way to talk about any of this because it's so unusual. We're in a really strange moment in our country's history. And I think all we can do as citizens is really pay attention to what's going on and where we feel strongly about something, let our representatives know that.
So before we wrap up the episode, we wanted to talk about today, November 1st, which in the Catholic and several Protestant traditions, including my own tradition, the Anglican tradition, is called All Saints Day. This is not a holiday I celebrated as a Baptist growing up. Beth, have you ever celebrated All Saints Day?
Our church does a ceremony now that I'm a disciple of Christ. I never experienced an All Saints Day celebration in church growing up either.
But let me just say that I would like to make an official pitch for All Saints Day or Commemoration of All Faithful Departed. I love that there's a moment in our calendar sort of tied to the cycle of the year as we experience it up here in the United States. So there's shortening of days, there's growing darkness, and we have this ritual where we stop and take a moment to really think about and realize those that are no longer with us, but who, you know, in my faith tradition, we are still in relationship with. I think it's a really important sort of thing to do. This is more a nuanced life conversation, but I just think it's so important that I wanted to talk about it because this episode is coming about on All Saints Day. You know, this year I will definitely be lighting a candle and taking a moment to memorialize the life of Rachel Held Evans, who's really important to this show and to many in the audience and to other people who I've loved and lost over the years. And I just wanted to encourage everybody else to do the same. I think it's a really nice thing to stop and take a conscious moment to do.
I have some wind chimes from my grandmother's funeral in my backyard, and they mean so much to me as we're talking about, you know, how we think about people who have been with us and are not now, but are still in some ways. I can't help but think about those wind chimes every time I'm outside and I hear them move at all, especially when it's not particularly windy. It gives me such comfort to stay connected to my grandmother, who was this incredibly important person in my life. And I love being able, especially in a church, a place where often around death, I feel like there's such a sense of finality, even though that's totally at odds with the Christian faith, to think about the people that we have lost and that we remember and that we carry around in our hearts. So I'm glad that you brought this up, Sarah. I think it is really important.
I hope everyone takes a minute on this All Saints Day. And thank you for joining us here on Pantsy Politics. We will be back on Election Day on Tuesday. And so as the election fervor increases, try your best to keep it nuanced, y'all.
Dylan Garvin produces Pantsuit Politics every week. Thanks for making us sound better, Dylan.
Elise Knapp is our managing director, which means we could not make it without her scheduling, organization, feedback, and creativity. Thank you, Elise.
We couldn't make Pantsuit Politics without support from our listeners. Go to patreon.com/pantsuitpolitics to learn how you can receive more nuance and help us make the show.
Special thanks to our executive producers who have committed to supporting us in a major, life-giving way.
Our executive producers are Tracy Putoff, Tim Miller, David McWilliams, Joshua Allen, Linda Rucker, Martha Bernotsky, Melanie Cravey, and Tiffany Hassler.
Our theme music is composed and performed by Dante Lima. The music under our ads is composed and performed by Dylan Garvin.
Learn more about our lives, live events that we're involved in, and what we're reading each week by signing up for our weekly newsletter at pantsuitpoliticsshow.com.
And connect with members of the Pantsuit Politics community by following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.